Oh, Paul, these winters are killing me. As I dart from my heated car to the heated skyway to my nice heated office with a portable heater. We love to gripe and groan about the weather, about cold fronts, but many of us have no recollection whatsoever of what it was like before creature comforts like Thinsulate, heated car seats, remote vehicle starters. One of my friends, Elaine Hendrickson, shared some stories yesterday of her childhood. She grew up in Manoman back in the late 40s. And she said, Paul, I remember my dad sliding a tray of burning coal embers under the car's engine to get it to warm up so that it would start up every morning. She said, we would take the battery out of the car when we were done with it and keep it in the farmhouse just to keep it warm, just to increase the odds of the car actually starting the next day. And Elaine added that the arrival of electricity and indoor plumbing was a big deal post-World War II in the late 40s, early 50s, as the entire state became electrified. So my note to myself, stop whining. The winters aren't as bad. Most of them are not that bad. Maybe one in four is an old-fashioned butt-kicker between that and new technology, Bill, that insulates us from the winter, from the cold. You know, it gets cold here, but it's just not the way it used to be. So anyway, I thought that was vaguely interesting. And thank you, Elaine, for putting things into perspective. By the way, on this date, 1981, we were digging out from half a foot of snow in the Twin Cities. That's what can happen on the 20th day of November. DJ Kaiser, a meteorologist, one of my businesses out in Eden Prairie called Predictix. And he did some research into our winds. And DJ says, even though spring is on average the windiest season of the year in the Twin Cities, with April the windiest month, we've been dealing with some very windy conditions, unusually windy for November. Almost every day this month, we've had at least one wind report over 15 miles an hour. 14 of the last 18 days through Saturday have had a peak wind gust of at least 20 miles an hour. The strongest wind so far was just this last Saturday, 39 miles an hour, shortly after 1 o'clock. The other thing that caught my eye, disaster claims soar in this year of calamities. We've had 15 separate billion-dollar disasters nationwide so far in 2017. That ties the all-time record back in 2011. This is a story in the Washington Post. The number of Americans who registered for federal disaster aid jumped tenfold this year, costing billions of dollars in additional emergency funding as the nation nears the end of a historically calamitous year. And by the way, there is no money tree. Those dollars come from us, come from all American taxpayers. Listen to this. More than 4.7 million Americans, about 1.4% of the population, have registered this year for disaster aid from FEMA. 4.7 million. Just last year, it was 480,000, and the year before that, it was 180,000. But three hurricanes, Harvey, Irma, Maria, along with the wildfires that decimated parts of Napa Valley and Northern California, affected an area 8% of the U.S. population. 8% of America's population was impacted by weather extremes this year. The hurricanes were followed by wildfires that killed 43 people and destroyed more than 7,000 homes in wine country. So again, you know, I think it's going to be more and more of an issue where people live and people who live in high-risk areas. Hurricane Alley along the coast, how many times do you rebuild your home? How many times do you get FEMA and American taxpayers to help rebuild your home before people say, no, wait, That's enough. Apparently, one home in Mississippi has been rebuilt 121 times, and it has cost American taxpayers $800,000. So, again, at some point, you get clubbed over the head repeatedly by the weather. Do you move?
Somebody rebuilt their home how many times?
121 times.
Over what period of time?
Over a period of 30 years. It has consistently flooded. And every time it floods, you know, they put in for disaster aid, and FEMA comes through, and they rebuild their home, and then it floods again. And
would that be a case for proving that sometimes we're slow learners?
It's a definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
That's it. You nailed it.
Oh, boy. But, again, we don't have too much to complain about here. We were one of those $15 billion disasters, Bill. There was a major hail and severe storm event back in June. But, you know, there's a disproportionate number of extreme storms, the Deep South, the Gulf Coast, Florida, and even the West Coast. So, yeah, we get cold fronts, but those – I keep reminding people those cold fronts inoculate us from the worst storms on Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't get hurricanes. We don't get earthquakes. We don't get volcanoes. Hopefully that Yellowstone supervolcano remains nice and dormant.
Yep. We just get frostbite.
We just get frostbite. You just slap on more clothes.
Exactly.
It's not that big a deal. Hey, when we come back, Frank Vassalero with some amazing news, allegations about Charlie Rose. That's coming up next on CCO. Paul Douglas and Bill Popp just hanging out. Thanks for tuning in on a Monday. Fairly quiet week shaping up weather-wise. Happy to report. No drama. Hopefully no drama for you either over the next few days. It's going to be a really terrific Thanksgiving holiday. Everybody will get along in harmony. There will be no shouting. There will be no disagreements at the table. Just keep the TV turned off, right? Turn on the jazz channel. No, better yet, turn on CCO. Yeah, that sounds better.
You'll be here.
I'll be here Thanksgiving Day.
Perfect.
Giving thanks that I have this gig. Very much so. Frank Vassalero joins us every day about 4:20. And Frank, when you sent the email over, I almost fell off my stool here.
Oh, there was people were like, "What?
What?"
When this, I mean, I'm reading through it still. I don't even have all the whole story.
Good. Eight women.
Eight credible women. If you're just getting in your car, Charlie Rose has been accused of sexually harassing eight women.
With nudity, groping, and lewd calls?
Some of them grabbing their butt, grabbing their breasts.
What?
Getting naked, walking in front of them, grabbing their genitals. I mean, it's staggering.
Wait, this is the Charlie Rose, the
Charlie
interviewer?
Rose, the guy who does the great interview around the circular table, the guy who's brought CBS Morning News back to life. This is the same Charlie Rose. And by the way, he's a correspondent for 60 Minutes, so I don't know what the network's going to do.
Well, they're down to 50 Minutes now.
Yeah.
Belly laugh. Oh, Paul. Thank you, Paul.
I would be laughing a lot harder if it didn't affect my company. It wasn't so serious, but that's pretty darn good.
No, I get it. But 60 Minutes is resilient. So, I mean, if it proves to be true. And
so have you talked about it yet?
No, I
have
not.
So here's what's going on, because we should get some people some information.
Yes,
so,
please.
This is a Washington Post story. They interviewed eight women, three of them on the record. They say it all happened between the 1990s. That goes back a while, but somewhere as recently as 2011. All these women, at the time it happened, were 21 to 37 years old. Charlie Rose is 75 now. So three of them are on the record. Five of them spoke on condition of anonymity out of fear that Rose, because of his stature in the television industry, his power over their careers, or what they described as his volatile temper, did not want to go on the record. He comes out with a statement. He says, "I want these women to know I hear them. I deeply apologize for my inappropriate behavior. I'm greatly embarrassed. I have behaved insensitively at times." I'm quoting all of this. "And I accept responsibility for that, though I do not believe all of these allegations are accurate. I always felt that I was pursuing shared feelings, even though now I realize I was mistaken."
Oh, man.
Unless someone tells you to walk out of the shower in front of them naked, that's not a shared feeling.
Wow. Boy, the mental image.
It goes on. I haven't read it all. One of them was an intern for Rose's PBS show. One of them was his assistant in the mid-2000s. She said there were at least 12 times when Rose walked nude in front of her while she worked in one of his New York City homes.
You'd think that would only have to happen once.
She was 21 at the time. He said he'd repeatedly call her late at night or in the morning to describe his fantasies of her swimming naked in the pool as he watched from his bedroom. Again, I'm only on page 3. I mean, I'm just reading the Washington Post article.
This is a bad dream.
Yeah, and it's, you know, his stature has grown too, as he, you know, with the fact that CBS's morning show is so relevant now and does well, and it's just so sad. I'm not sad for him. I mean, you know, I feel sad for these women that had to go through all this.
That it took this long, and but again, this groundswell, the dam has burst.
And again, 20 minutes ago, I would have said, hey, the big story is there's two huge liberal groups calling for Al Franken to resign today because, like we talked about last Friday, you know, once you get one, the trend is that you get more. And today, now, a second woman has come up. They say that in 2010 at the state fair, Al Franken grabbed her rear while they were taking a picture together at the fair.
Which is not a crime, I read today, right? I mean, it's wrong. It's off the charts wrong to do that, but I don't know where I read that. Apparently, that does not fit the legal description of assault.
I don't know.
Which would, but yeah, no, I'm not in any way defending that.
I don't know.
Good grief.
If you did it to my daughter, I'd want to assault
yeah,
you. I know
you'd,
that.
You'd want to punch me in both eyes, and I would deserve it.
So yes. These groups, one of them is called Credo, describes itself as a social change network. The other one's called Indivisible, another social change network. Both of them are very progressive organizations. And they said, hey, now we've got two women that have come forward, and we think that you should resign. So we'll see. Franken, the DFL party today said about Al Franken. They say this new allegation, by the way, this woman's name is Lindsay Menz.
Right.
They call it very troubling, and it highlights the need for an immediate and thorough ethics investigation into Franken. Franken's just been radio silent. Haven't heard a word from him since last week.
Can I ask your opinion on something, Frank?
I don't know. Go.
Well, I will.
I'm not sure if I'll answer it, but yes, ask it.
But I mean, all of these people are public people, right, who have been accused of wrongdoing, harassment, and, you know, where there's smoke, there's probably fire. And yes, these things probably did happen. And well, these women have been living with this for a long time. My question is, what about the secretary who works for Joe up at Joe's Pretty Good Plumbing in Willmar?
Yeah, it's tough.
And Joe is not a public figure that can be shamed publicly. In other words, if the secretary comes forward and says, hey, I've been assaulted, I've been abused, you know, is the media going to care? Is the media going to make as big a deal about the woman who comes forward in Willmar as they do about all these public figures?
No, the answer is no. The media will not make as big of a deal.
So is that right? Is it fair? Is it, I mean,
well, the only thing I think that is when these things are made a big deal of, that maybe just in general, you're seeing a bit of a culture shift.
Right.
So it's easier for the woman at ABC
right.
or even a really big company like Target right across the street, their headquarters from where I'm talking to you, mm-hmm. that has enough support and enough allies and a culture inside these places. Because, you know, the fear at Target or ABC Plumbing or, you know, a big TV station or whatever, is that you come forward and your career immediately grinds to a halt.
Right.
Right. Or the accusations turn against you. Right. Or it's like what happened, you know, with Bill Clinton, all the women that accused him of doing things. Next thing you know, you're a bimbo or a mm-hmm. slut or whatever. I mean,
right.
you know, those women were
yes.
crucified.
Yes, they were.
And it turns out in hindsight, they were might have been accurate.
They
know?
were ahead of the curve. And,
yeah,
and
so hopefully you get the change. I think that's the only thing because, no, to answer your question, you know, those things are not going to be made a big of a deal of and unless people make a big deal of them, right?
And
that means men need to join in on the thing.
It's about time we have this conversation.
Oh, man, just shocking stuff.
And it just goes on and on. Well, I'm anxious to hear more, and we will be tuned in. These Charlie Rose allegations and revelations are I'm just gobsmacked by that.
Yeah, so, no, and I guess I should say, you know, because we have a bit of a conflict, you know, covering these things.
Right.
He's a CBS employee. No official word yet that I've seen from CBS.
From
Again,
CBS.
All this happened within the last half an hour.
Oof. Well, thank you for getting that on the air, and we will be tuned in.
I would watch CBS tonight just to see.
Ugh.
How they handle it.
If they cover it, how they cover it. They should cover it,
and
right?
Well, we're going to cover it locally. You know, we
right.
have to, but I mean, you know, we're owned by this company. I don't know what they're going to say or do on the evening news. I'm sure they're freaking out in New York right now.
Oof, man. Frank Vassalero, 5-6-10.
Bill, really good talking to you. Nothing going on today. Maybe we'll chat tomorrow.
Thanks, Frank.
My pleasure. Yeah, good luck to your family. Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Frank. Do you have somebody who suffers from Alzheimer's in your extended family? If so, if you know somebody who is going through the pain and disruption of dealing with Alzheimer's, stick around. We're going to talk about undefeated innocence. That's coming up next on CCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Cheryl Crowfoot Knapp wrote a book called Undefeated Innocence about Alzheimer's and about the people who care for people that have Alzheimer's. And she wrote something really, really profound. She wrote, "We hold newborn babies and believe we look into eyes of innocence, lives undefeated by mortal existence. Children grow, life gets complicated, innocence erodes. We hold someone with Alzheimer's and believe we look into the eyes of fear. Lifetime memories fade like shadows, a decade at a time. Lives are lived in reverse. Alzheimer's attacks its innocent victims, but it doesn't defeat innocence. Those who have it seemingly return to being a young child and regain simplicity. Physical life ends like it began and returns to undefeated innocence." With us right now, the author of Undefeated Innocence, a terrific book, Cheryl Crowfoot Knapp. It's really good to have you on the air, Cheryl.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Paul. It's an honor to be able to talk about Alzheimer's and to give hope and encouragement to those who are facing it.
What would you say to listeners out there who are grappling with Alzheimer's, with an older loved one? What sage words of advice based on what you've been through?
Boy, there's so many different angles to go, but the first thing I'd like to say is that there's so many of us. Betsy Broyles Arnold, her father is Frank Broyles, a very famous athletic director here in Arkansas, and she calls it the first rodeo. When you first become a caregiver to Alzheimer's, you don't know what you're facing. You don't know how to handle what you're going to be facing, but there's so many of us that have gone through this rodeo. I've actually been through it twice, losing both my parents to Alzheimer's, first my dad and then my mom.
I'm sorry.
But thank you. It taught me so much about life, about enjoying life, about finding collateral beauty in life instead of the collateral damage. But now I can provide myself as a resource to other people who are walking through it. So what I tell a caregiver is, you're not in it by yourself. You're not alone. You're going to feel really isolated, but there's so many more of us that have been through this journey and have been able to find the really beautiful, touching moments that allowed us to continue to move forward with it.
And Cheryl, you wrote this for Alzheimer's caregivers, whether it's family members or whether it's even professionals who are dealing with people suffering from Alzheimer's, correct?
Well, it turned out that way. I didn't set out to write a book. Since fourth grade, I always wanted to write a book, but I didn't know this was going to be it. But as I struggled, Mom was always my best friend, and so to see her go down this road was really, really difficult. So as I struggled, I started to journal. As I started to journal, I started looking up to God and say, "Where are you in Alzheimer's?" And so when I started writing all of this down and realizing there was a lot of hope that I found through the Beatitudes. And so that's when it turned into a book. And it's becoming a resource for caregivers. I was at a recent symposium and I had a little table with the book and a woman came running up to me and says, "You're the author." And I didn't know if I was supposed to duck and run for cover or, you know. But as she started to let me know how much of a difference this book meant to her. She was looking for a faith-based book that would give her hope and encouragement as it relates to Alzheimer's, instead of hearing all the numbers and the facts about Alzheimer's, that it's a fatal disease, that there's 5 million Americans with it, 1 in 10 seniors over 65 has it, it's going to bankrupt Medicare. That sounds so ominous, but this book was set out to give hope and training to both, like you said, both professionals as well as family caregivers.
Well, my mother-in-law is struggling with Alzheimer's, and she's been, you know, kind of a steady decline for 8 years. And she's an amazing woman. And my wife, I see what, you know, what she goes through, and my wife's sisters. And so I'm with you, and I'm so glad you wrote this. And my question to you is, has it always been like this? Is it just that, was it called something else back in the 1940s and 1950s? Or are we seeing an uptick, an increase in people who are suffering from Alzheimer's?
From the research that I've done, in my own personal opinion, I truly believe that it's an issue of both. There actually is a Dr. Alzheimer who actually first noticed it in the early 1900s. And he was a psychiatrist, I believe, and he had a woman who was a patient of his, and when she passed away, he kept stains of portions of her brain. Decades later, they returned to those same stains and realized that it was a cognitive disease. And since he was the first one to have discovered it, that's where the name Alzheimer's began. So it's been around for a long time, but they didn't give it a name until maybe three decades ago. So there is a lot more awareness because it's called something. But now as the baby boomers are starting to get into the age grouping where early Alzheimer's symptoms can begin, or there's a lot of early onset Alzheimer's as well, where it can affect people even in their 30s or 40s. As you know, my husband is Chuck Knapp, and we did a walk down in Little Rock, Arkansas, at the beginning of the month, and we met a woman named Gloria who was really inspiring to us because she has 8 members in her family who have early onset Alzheimer's. And I asked her, I said, Gloria, would you get the gene testing? Because early onset is typically genetic. And I said, would you do the gene testing? And she said, I already know that I've got it, and I'm living my life to enjoy my kids, enjoy my husband, and deal with it when it's time to deal with it.
One day
at a time. You have a number of different varieties of Alzheimer's and other dementias. Alzheimer's, of course, is a form of dementia. And as it gets talked about more and the doctors get more learned on how to diagnose it, it is an increasing disease. The prediction is that by 2015, we're going to be having 16 million Americans with Alzheimer's. So it can be a devastating disease.
Cheryl,
go ahead.
No, my question for you, you listed out some of the triggers for Alzheimer's. These have been scientifically vetted?
They don't know yet for sure what causes it. I mean, there's been a host of things that they've talked about, whether it's aluminum, sugars, diabetes, glucose issues.
Sleep apnea, stroke, high blood pressure, depression.
All of them. Even having high cholesterol by the age of 40, they look at as a trigger. They're really spending a lot of time in research now about how glucose is being used by the brain and its relationship to diabetes. But there's new research and new diagnostic tools that are just right on the cusp. The money that Bill Gates donated, the $100 million in dementia and Alzheimer's research, is going to be an amazing tool. As they expand, right now there's what's called a 3D retinal scanner. It's a high-test retinal scanner, and when we go into the eye doctor, we get peered into the back of our eyes and, you know, are told, well, gee, we don't see diabetes, we don't see stroke. This newest upgrade, this 3D retinal scanner, is showing some success at being able to now diagnose at the very earliest possible the timing is everything, but they can see the very early plaques that might be forming, and they still believe that it's the plaques and tangles that ultimately lead to destroying the brain. But there's even peptide research now where there's a peptide that can go through the blood-brain barrier that will attach itself to the protein that creates the plaques and tangles. So we're actually getting to be on the cusp of a cure and the cusp of really early diagnosis. So maybe there's some hope for those likely to contract Alzheimer's. And I'm at a moderate risk for it now with 2 parents who have passed from Alzheimer's. The fact that I'm a woman, 66% of those with Alzheimer's are women, so that increases my odds. And it also increases the odds to be a caregiver because of the anxiety and the stress over it.
Well, thank you for writing this book and, you know, for your courage in helping others. The book, again, is called Undefeated Innocence, Cheryl Crowfoot Knapp, the amazing wife of the amazing Chuck Knapp. And we're so glad that that you went public with this. We're certainly sorry for your loss and wish you much courage and strength as you go forward. And thanks for sharing some time with us.
And give your greetings to your wife, too. I know the struggle that she's going through, and our prayers will be with her and her family and you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Cheryl.
You're welcome. Thank you.
God bless. Okay, it's 4:50 now. That's Wicks and Jewelers time. Time to explore an incredible collection of fine watches at Wicks and Jewelers just off 35W in Blue. Little David and David, a little bit of Bill Pop coming up in the next hour. If you have family coming over, he has some nuggets of wisdom, steps you can take to lower the risk of a family argument at Thanksgiving. Stick around for that. That's coming up next.